Are you ready?
You better get ready.
Get ready to dive into the heart of local sports action.
Broadcasting live from the heartland of Missouri. Welcome
to the SEMO Scramble on SEMO ESPN.
Get set.
Because it's time to catch up on the latest local highlights, in-depth analysis, and interviews from the Blue Deal and beyond.
Marcus said, here we go.
And welcome in. It's the SEMO Scramble here on this Saturday morning. Clay Harrell, Rusty Hendricks, glad to have you along for the ride on SEMO ESPN, 1220 AM, 93.5 FM, and online at SEMOESPN.com. Clay, how we doing, man?
It is a beautiful weather day today.
So, love it.
A lot going on today. I think professional sports-wise in St. Louis, I saw the Battlehawks are supposed to, I think, set like a modern like spring football record.
Yeah, so their record, 38,000 that they've had, they're expecting maybe over 40,000 today.
That's, I mean, I imagine a lot of people are going to be going from the Cardinal game to the Battlehawks or to St. Louis City, if I had to bet.
So you have the Cardinal game at 1:15, which, well, you know, got your jersey on. You're going to be going to that. We'll talk about that in a second. And then you have, after that, you know, the Battlehawks game at night. What is it, 7 o'clock?
City's at like 7:32, and then I guess 7:30. I guess some people, too, could be hitting maybe a local bar to go watch the Blues, hopefully, you know.
That's a 5 o'clock game, correct?
The Blues? I think so, yeah. And then hopefully they can kind of figure out how to beat the San Jose Sharks, which I never thought I'd be saying in 2024, but here we are.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get, maybe touch on the Blues a little bit. But yeah, man, you got your Cardinals jersey, the powder blue, which the Cardinals can't wear until probably summer. But hey, you have that jersey on, the Arenado jersey. You're gonna be going to the game today against the Marlins.
Yeah. So I mean, first off, on the whole jersey thing, how is it even possible that the jersey manufacturer can't get them in until June? That just kind of baffles me. But hey, I'm not fanatics. The Cardinals are supposed to get their City Connect jerseys in before their powder blues. So I don't know. But yeah, it's going to be, I think, a beautiful day. Mid-60s, doesn't seem much rain in the forecast, so looking forward to it. Two of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball, Trevor Rogers and Steven Matz, going at it.
Steven Matz. Look, I mean, what have you thought of Steven Matz here real quick so far at the beginning of the year? I thought he's been, you know, pretty good.
So I think in spring, and if you look at the spring, I think every Cardinal starter had, like, with everybody was down on Gibson, Lynn, Matz. I know Matz had one start against the Dodgers, but he looked pretty good. It just goes to show, I think, too, and I've heard it talked about a couple times on 101 or on Bally, like, the veteran guys, spring doesn't matter. They don't, not that they don't care, but
think about Kyle Gibson.
Exactly. Like, for them, it's like, whatever. They're probably tinkering with stuff more than anything. And I think that's just, so far, two starts with Lance Lynn, too. Like, he didn't look great the other day against the Marlins, but he was good enough to get you through five innings. And I think that just kind of goes to show that those guys, not that they don't care, like I said, but I think they're out there just messing with stuff and just trying to get to the games that matter. And I'm not saying that I'm all in on this pitching staff, but I'm just saying the springs, I think, aren't reflective of what we've seen. And, yeah, I think Matz, if he can stay healthy, because he hasn't had a full healthy year.
Not with the Cardinals.
Not with the Cardinals. And if he can have a healthy year, and I remember when they signed him, like, I was pretty happy about the pickup. I think you could kind of see that potential this year if he stays healthy.
That's right. That's a big if. We'll get into the Cardinals in our next segment. Clay, also, at around 9:30, we're going to talk with our buddy Marty Michaud. We're going to talk to him, and, of course, we'll get, you know, kind of what he does on the Sports Huddle. He talks to them Mondays with Marty there with the Sports Huddle, and they kind of get into everything. We're going to do that with Marty. We'll definitely get into some SEMO athletics in particular with him. I do want to mention real quick, how about the SEMO tennis team? Clay, they got a big victory over Southern Indiana. They clinched the OVC title. They're undefeated at 5-0 in the OVC. They're just, man, first time in program history, the Redhawks back-to-back OVC regular season champions. It's their third season crown in the last 4 years for SEMO tennis. That's impressive.
It just feels like that they don't ever rebuild. It's just like the old saying, like, we don't rebuild, we reload, or whatever people say. That's 100% true with SEMO tennis. Like, Coach Gunn does an unbelievable job with that program, and you're seeing it again. I know that match yesterday with Southern Indiana was big because I think going in there, both undefeated, correct, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right.
So that one carried a lot of weight, and you know, for them to rise to the occasion and get a big win, that's huge. And congratulations to them, just awesome stuff.
So big win there, and we'll talk with Marty Mischel later about that. Also, the SEMO softball team, a big series starting today, doubleheader against Tennessee Tech. You know, they're kind of teetering the SEMO with that kind of that 3-2 seeds, you know, or stand the standing. So, you know, some big series as both teams are kind of neck and neck there in the OVC.
You know, I think one thing to look out for, they just knocked off ranked Mizzou. In midweek 1-0. That's a huge win. That could be a jumping off point, maybe. Like, that could be the motivation, maybe some momentum. So look for them to have a big series this weekend. I think coming off a big win against a Power 5 school, an SEC opponent, and a ranked opponent at that, and to win it the way you did, 1-0, like that, I think that could give a lot of momentum to that group, some much-needed momentum at that.
Yeah, Mizzou was the number 11th ranked team. So, hey, for SEMO to upset them, that was pretty impressive. It's the highest ranked opponent the Redhawks have ever beat, and it's the first time since 98 where they upended the Tigers at Columbia.
I wonder if baseball and softball have ever, yet alone, played Mizzou in the same year, and if, like, when was the last time they both beat Mizzou in the same year?
That's a good question. I might have to reach out to Jeff Hanza, the sports information director, on that one. That's a good question.
So, I mean,
honestly, like, I would not be surprised that's the first time ever they've done
that. That's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, and like I said, I don't know how often that they both play Mizzou in the same year. I would assume frequently, but it was kind of funny. I was talking to my buddy Owen Carando, and he was like, anytime, like, when SEMO baseball beat Mizzou and then when SEMO softball beat Mizzou, he's like, just go to their Twitter replies, and people were, like, losing it. Like, they were like, we need to recruit SEMO's pitcher, Patience Holman, who had an outstanding
year. She's amazing.
She's incredible to watch. But they were like, the Mizzou fans are just like losing it. So that was kind of funny.
But you mentioned Holman. I mean, so against that Mizzou team, she went the distance. It was the fourth complete game, first shutout of the season. She allowed just 3 hits in that game, struck out 3, walked 1. I mean, but she's dominant, and she is definitely the leader as far as the pitching staff goes for SEMO.
I'll tell you, and you could kind of see it coming, like late in Rachel Rook's career, like Holman was always kind of that, like maybe on a doubleheader day you would go to her, like to give Rook a rest. And obviously everybody knows how dominant Rachel Rook was with SEMO softball. But you could kind of see Patience Holman just kind of coming on. And now that she kind of has the keys and is the ace of this staff, like you're almost seeing, and this is, I don't think it's disrespectful to either of them, but it's like Rachel Rook 2.0. Like the dominance and that they have in the circle, and the job that she does, she just limits everything that opposing hitters do. And I think she's more of a pitch to contact. I know Rook racked up a lot of strikeouts, but they're both just so dominant, so controlled in the circle. And when they're both in there, I mean, when Holman's in there, it's tough to beat.
And then for the SEMO baseball team, a big series this weekend at Little Rock, Clay. Little Rock got the best of SEMO last night, winning 8-2. So again, both of those teams are right now 5-2 in the OVC, towards the top of the conference. So again, this is a big series, and for SEMO, you know, if they can, you know, find a way to come out and win 2 out of 3, win the next couple of the games on the road, that would really help them in the standings.
I mean, not to take away from what you just said, can we talk about the jerseys that they unveiled though?
The Browns jerseys.
Those are incredible. I don't know who's responsible for the design within athletics, or if it was even within athletics, but whoever designed those, incredible job. Those are awesome jerseys.
And I love that too. I know the kids have to love it. You know, that's just a cool thing, and I hope that other programs do that. You know, I saw kind of the SEMO basketball team this year, Clay, kind of go have an old to, you know, kind of a retro home jersey that they've had this year as well. I love that. You know, I actually love the SEMO basketball women's black jerseys that they had this year as well. So I love that. The different combinations, just trying some different things and, you know, just having fun. Be cool with it.
I saw a lot of people were asking, are you guys going to be selling the hats? And I don't think there's any hats for sale, they said. But I wonder if the demand gets enough, are they gonna start putting some of those hats on sale? Because those, I mean, everything from, like, the jersey to the hat, outstanding. Like, I just thought those were amazing. And I'm excited for that game to see those worn, because that's going to be really, really cool.
Well, you know, maybe we'll have to talk to our buddy Glenn Campbell. If you haven't heard, Glenn Campbell has a new venture coming. It's called Make My Cap. he has that going on, where maybe you can get a custom cap there with Glenn Campbell in the future.
He might know a thing or two about hats,
maybe
from,
so.
From what I've gathered. Yeah, yeah. So congratulations to him as well.
Absolutely. All right, let's switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament. Final Four action going on in both the women and the men's tournament. So the women started off, they played last night. The men played tonight. Let's start with the women, Clay. And this is how things went. A big controversial call last night in the Iowa-UConn game. Take a listen.
Title game on the line. Mule, the drive, 5 seconds left. Looking for Beckers and an offensive foul. An offensive foul on Edwards with 3.9 to go.
So a big controversial foul there from UConn and their big post player in Edwards. Look, I get it. It was in the moment you looked at it and you thought, oh, no, how could you make that call? If you slow it down and look at it closer, we both looked at it again this morning. Look, it was a foul. However, again, I'll repeat it. It was a moving screen. It was a foul, an offensive foul. You can slow it down. You can have an official come on here. We can call Denver Stuckey or some of our buddies right now and talk to him. Look, it was a foul. But, boy, it was tough to call that in that situation. I would have loved for the official to swallow the whistle. And I get it. It's their job. They can't just pick and choose when to make a call. I get that. But you just wish that, a game was not decided by something like that.
So, and admittedly, I came in into the station this morning and said, hey, I didn't think that was a foul. And you slowed it down. And after seeing it actually slowed down, her knee gets kind of pretty far out there. She is moving. It definitely was a foul. However, like, I'm with you. No chance that you're, like, letting yourself be the center of attention in that moment. But, like you said, they got a job to do. I mean, the rule, like, when you're taking your course and whatever to be an official, like, it doesn't say, hey, in the final 5 seconds, you can't
exactly
call a foul.
Right.
So, I mean, they were just doing their job at the end of the day, and they made the call that they felt needed to be made, and it was a moving screen. And, like I said, nothing that says you can't call a foul in the final 5 seconds. It just kind of, if that was a call in the final 5 seconds of the first half, nobody's talking about it.
Sure.
So, I mean, for obvious reasons, but, it is what it is. I guess if you didn't want that called, make sure you're set on your screen.
That, and, look, UConn was leading in that game for the majority of the game. Give credit to Iowa. They were able to come back and played a great fourth quarter, third quarter and fourth quarter, able to come back, and this is how things ended.
Clark to inbound, Iowa by 2.8 to go, and that will do it! Iowa survives Connecticut and heads back to the national championship game.
So again, it was Iowa getting the win 71-69 over UConn. Again, controversial, but Caitlin Clark back to the championship game. They will face off against South Carolina, undefeated South Carolina, 37-0, Clay, as they defeat NC State, really rolled away with it, 78-59. So it's South Carolina and their dominant team undefeated against Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes.
I think Dawn Staley is probably going to be taking a page out of Geno's book in the way they defended Caitlin Clark, because the UConn had an excellent game plan in that one, and I think Dawn Staley would be crazy to not try to mimic that.
She struggled in the first half. Give her credit. She bounced back in the second half, but she struggled in the first half. But, Hannah Stolke was awesome for Iowa and some of their role players, and that's what's helped them get to where they are this year. It's not just Clark. It's the rest of the entire team. But that's the thing. I think it's pretty cool. The women's game has kind of taken things by storm a little bit here down the stretch of the Final Four. I honestly believe, and it's not, doesn't normally happen, but I honestly believe it's been more compelling than the men's game this year is the women's game, no doubt.
There's no question about it. Like, I saw a TikTok the other day that was like, this guy was like, we're going to do an exercise. He was like, I want you to think for a quick second, like, name one college basketball player. And he was like, I guarantee you said Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, Angel Reese, Haley Van Lith, Juju Edwards, like, whoever. Like, it was like, you probably, there's name one men's player that has any impact, like, that makes, like, you want to turn on the TV. I can't name one. It is completely about the women's game. The WNBA is going to take off, too. It's going to be awesome.
It's good for their sport. Absolutely.
Terrific. Like, it's going to be awesome.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Championship is on Sunday. So on tomorrow, I believe it was a 2 o'clock, 3 p.m. game. So that should be fun. Again, South Carolina and Iowa tomorrow. All right, so for the men's game, two of them tonight, final four teams. You have NC State against Purdue at 5:09 on TBS, and then at 7:49 p.m., Alabama and UConn. The most, I think, exciting game to watch is probably going to be Purdue and NC State. I think that's going to be fun to see how NC State will guard Zach Edey and how DJ Burns.
They've got big Burns, baby. They don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Those two down low. But I think UConn, it's going to be hard for me to see them stumble. I just don't see them stumbling against Alabama.
No. Alabama is, I think, a big defense optional team. And against UConn, defense needs to probably be priority. And I don't know that Nate Oates' team has defense priority in them. No disrespect. That's how they got to this point. But it's not going to work against UConn.
So, obviously, the national championship game will be Monday night. Are we destined to see Purdue and UConn, or do you think NC State can slip in?
I'd love to see NC State win just for the chaos, but I think it's Purdue-UConn, and then UConn wins by 12.
Yeah, it'd be hard for me, the way UConn's been playing, not to pick them. I won't be rooting for them. I would love to see NC State or Purdue, the winner of that game, defeat UConn. But I don't know. I think, you know, a lot has been said about Zach Edey and the Purdue program. They've been expected to be winners the last couple of years. They've fallen short. Give them credit. They made it to the Final Four, and I have an opportunity to make it to the championship game. I'd love to see them make their run.
Yeah, I think it's possible. But, like, I mean, UConn hasn't stumbled at all. Like, they haven't looked human. They've been, like, by far the best team in this tournament, and it hasn't been close. So I think, you know, it'll take your A++ game and UConn playing a C++ game. Like, it's going to be, like, it's going to take a lot to beat that team, no matter who it is.
I agree. All right, so we're going to talk a little Cardinals baseball coming up next. We'll take a break, Clay, and talk a little bit about opening day and what's to hold for the St. Louis Cardinals here in the near future. All right, stay with us. SEMO Scramble on SEMO ESPN. Welcome back. SEMO Scramble here on SEMO ESPN Radio. Clay Harrell, Rusty Hendricks. And when you hear that song, what do you think about, Clay?
We were sorry that we were too busy trying to get the Clydesdales out of here. Every time that comes on, they had to clear them out of the station.
Clippity clap, clippity clap.
Sorry for the delay. We're back, though. The Clydesdales are out of the station.
Opening day on Thursday, and boy, didn't look great at the beginning, in which the Cardinals were behind, but they had a nice comeback victory, a big seventh inning to get them the win. And, you know, big crowd for opening day. You knew it would be. It is every year. But here's the thing. One of the things as a Cardinals fan, you know, I was working at the time, so I recorded it. I told you that, you know, I had to record it and watch later. But I always make a point on opening day to watch the pregame festivities, to watch the Clydesdales go around the track, to watch the motorcade with the Hall of Famers and the players. Look, it's special, and it brings back memories for me as a fan. and just, you know, watching the Cardinals growing up. You know, that's one of the things, their history, their traditions, they do that right. That is something that is special as a Cardinals fan. And it really does. It's kind of a moving moment and a moving thing, you know, inside of you.
Two things. First off, I'm realizing that I'm now getting old because Matt Holliday is a part of the Red Jackets.
Yeah.
That is kind of crazy to think about. Second, it's kind of like kind of sad to see how it's dwindling, like how many of them are there. Like, obviously, LeBron.
Johnny La Russa,
he's getting old.
Yeah.
But, like, when you think, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there used to be a ton of Red Jackets, and now that Bob Gibson, Lou Brock have all passed, like, Red Shandy, Stan Musial, like, Mike Shannon, it's like, it starts to dwindle, and it's just kind of, like, eerie in a way. Good to see Whitey Herzog there, though.
Absolutely.
That was awesome. That was cool. But, no, I realize I am now getting old because Matt Holliday is a Red Jacket, and I'm like, oh, I remember when he got traded here, so I'm not a huge fan of seeing him as a Red Jacket because it's showing me that the childhood, like, it won't be long before. I think there'll be, like, a special, because I think only one can get in or two could get in at a time. Is that, like, how the Red Jacket thing works?
Yeah, so they vote on one as far as, you know, as a fan vote, and then they do I forget what it's actually called, kind of like a historical committee-type vote as well. They vote in someone.
So
two can get in at a time.
My very, very not hot take prediction here is, I have a feeling we're going to see, in a couple years, three go in for the first time together, if I had to bet.
Well, we know Molina, we know Albert, we know that they're coming soon, right? We know eventually, probably, you know, Matt Carpenter,
Adam Wainwright. I think Wainwright, Molina, and Pujols all go in together.
Maybe, yeah.
I think I think that makes way too much sense. But also, to me, again, I don't think any Cardinal fans are going to feel this way. Underrated part of opening day at Busch was Jake Berger, the St. Louis kid, hitting two home runs in his first game at Busch Stadium. That had to be crazy for him. Not only was it your first game at Busch Stadium, you know, CBC guy, you have to imagine he grew up probably going to home openers, watching home openers. To be there, like, as a player on the opposing team and then to hit two home runs, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, his family was in attendance. He said his grandpa was there, and that was the first time his grandpa has been able to see him live in a major league game. So I know that was special for him as well, that his grandpa was able to be there live for that.
Yeah, that was honestly, I know the Cardinals won. Shout out to Luis Arraez and the Marlins defense for being pathetic. But that was
an ode to the 23 Cardinals.
Yeah,
thanks, Marlins.
Yeah. But to me, like, Jake Berger, that was one of my favorite moments opening day at Busch, just because I thought that was a pretty cool moment.
I want to talk about Ivan Herrera. He had the first, you know, run of the game for the Cardinals, his first career home run, and it came at Busch Stadium on opening day, special moment. But, you know, here's a guy.
That was his first career home run?
First career.
Wow.
He's a guy, Clay, that I think, you know, he could potentially be a valuable asset for the Cardinals as a backup. And maybe, you know, maybe down the stretch later on in the year, he's a guy that's going to get, you know, quite a few more opportunities. He's pretty solid behind the plate. You know, there's some things probably to work on there, but he's got a good bat, and I think that can play if he continues to build more and more confidence.
I had tweeted, it was last weekend after the Saturday win against the Dodgers, like whatever game that Herrera started and they won, I had tweeted that, like, he did an unbelievable job, like, managing the game, calling the game, and, you know, you saw it again Thursday. Like, he just looks comfortable back there. And this is what I'm about to say. It goes for both him and Contreras. They have been awesome at, like, framing pitches and stealing strikes. Contreras especially, because of all the talk about him last year. He's been outstanding behind the plate, and he's done a great job of stealing some pitches that I don't think last year he was stealing. Obviously, like I said, a lot was made at this time last year. I think a lot of it was because of one Jack Flaherty. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. He's done a great job. Herrera's done a great job. And, I mean, I feel 1,000 times more confident when Herrera's in the lineup than I ever did with Andrew Kisner. No disrespect. It's just, you know, the truth, I think.
I just see the potential there with Herrera, and I think, you know, he's a guy that, you know, maybe we watch blossom here later on. We'll see. I mean, it's early, but that was a fun moment for him. So they'll play again 1 p.m. today against the Marlins. Steven Amat's on the mound today. Tomorrow they play also at 1:15. Kyle Gibson on the mound for the Cardinals. So, you know, this is a series. Look, the Marlins are 0-8. You'd love to see the Cardinals, you know, step on their throat, so to speak.
Get the brooms out.
And find a way to get it done. Look, after the first series for the Cardinals, they've been playing good baseball. They have, you know, look, they're 4-4. You know, it's not the start that anybody necessarily would want, but
when you play the Dodgers, I think it kind of like is so, all right.
Here's the thing, too, Clay. A lot of people are making a lot of that series or how they're opening up on the West and how tough of a schedule. But here's my thing, too. Look, yeah, they were playing their first, what, 7 games in a row. I actually think it's a good thing because guess what? They have more off days obviously coming.
One every week here for the next 3 or 4.
One every week. And look, you don't have to go to the West Coast, you know, like that again. Like that was your one trip to San Diego and Los Angeles. So instead of doing that in July or in maybe late August when you guys are exhausted and you have to make a long trip to the West Coast, it's already done and over with.
I got to say, too, if we did like a SEMO scramble loser from the last week, the Dodgers grounds crew, what are we doing? Like,
tarp.
I know that was like, because we haven't done a show since then, that was one of the worst displays of grounds crew I've ever seen before in
my life.
I
don't think they've had a lot of practice rain there in L.A.
No, it was the first rain delay since 2015. What I was going to say is I think, you know, I will not take back what I said about the pitching last week. It might have been a bit of an overreaction about the offense. Because you are facing Tyler Glasnow, Bobby Miller, who for some reason was torched by the Cubs yesterday, but whatever. And then Yamamoto, and then Gavin Stone. To me, the test, like, it's hard to gauge because they didn't look great against Darvish. They looked good against Waldron, but that's a number 5. Didn't look great against Darvish. They didn't look great against Musgrove. I know they won the game against Darvish. To me, like, it's kind of concerning that you're seeing that against, like, 1s and 2s and, you know, who's right. Knocking on the door Monday. The Phillies. And guess what? You get Spencer Turnbull in game 1, which is all fine and dandy, but game 2, Zach Wheeler, game 3, Aaron Nola. So that's like, that has to figure itself out because if you're not going to win much that matters if you can't hit a 1 or a 2. And I think what's like the Dodgers, you can erase, but not being able to hit Darvish or Musgrove, like, I don't know if it's a mental thing at this point, but I mean, Wheeler, Nola is not, I think, is better than Darvish and Musgrove. So
look, I mean, they're good quality pitchers for a reason, right? They're, more times than not, they're going to limit what the bats can do. Like, there's plenty of guys right now that aren't swinging it well. It's good to see Arenado finally starting to pick it up a little bit, some of the other guys, but there's plenty of guys right now that aren't swinging it well. And for the Cardinals, look, for them to be at their best, for them to make a long, strong run, your two boppers have to hit in Goldschmidt and Arenado, and if they aren't hitting, this lineup is totally different.
And it brings to the point, like, who is really hitting well right now for the Cardinals? Like I don't think, I mean, Donovan's kind of come on after
Wynn.
Donovan wins. I mean, I am thrilled with what I've seen from Mason Wynn. He looks great. Donovan Wynn, like, Contreras just has the 2 home runs and a double.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's getting on base at a high rate, which you don't really expect him to do, but Arenado maybe is turning a corner. Goldie's been pretty good.
He's been pretty consistent.
Goldie's taken a lot of strikes.
Like, he is.
Hittable strikes, too, I think. Gorman looks like he's got a massive hole in his bat. Jordan Walker, the whole thing with you heard on Sunday Night Baseball with Eduardo Perez, his hips leaking out. He can't hit anything. You saw it a couple times with the Padres. He took it to right field, which was good. Wynn's hitting. Victor Scott's taking good at bats. He's hit the ball hard. Ball's not falling. So it does. Like, they're winning games. Like you said, though, not everybody's hitting, and really mostly everybody's not hitting, which maybe is a good sign.
Yeah. But I think, for the most part, the pitching has been okay. You want to see improvements there as well. Be ready to see, you know, when Sonny Gray comes back, how that affects this rotation and team as a whole. Look, there's plenty of things to have concern about for the Cardinals. There's plenty of things to look at and say, man, just, you know, really, really don't know how things are going to play out. But you do like that they're playing much better baseball. They're running better. They're defending better. You don't see all the little mistakes, the fundamental stuff. It's gotten better so far in the year, and that's what you really like to see.
They haven't made an error yet this year.
Yes.
Knock on wood. But I want to ask you really quick. I know we probably have to get to a break. Am I crazy for thinking that the Cardinals could have a top 5 bullpen this year? I think their bullpen is phenomenal. Kittredge has been great.
I think you need Middleton back for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kittredge has been my favorite addition. When he pitches, dude, it looks like he does not care at all. But he's so gross. He's got the sinker, the slider that falls off the table.
Palante has been much better too.
Palante's been great. Gallegos has been great. Jojo Romero's been great. Like, I think the bullpen could be a top 5 piece, like, in baseball.
Like, and O'Brien, you know, if he hopefully he gets back.
I'm not putting any stock into his first appearance.
But he has nasty stuff.
I agree. I think he was nervous. I think he's going to be like, this bullpen could be outstanding. And I know Helsley blew a save, and he kind of tends to make things interesting at times. But his last two outings, he's been really good. I'm telling you, top five bullpen. But I also said the Blues a couple years ago would have a top five power play with like Mike Hoffman and Torrey Krug, and it was very much not that. So
yeah, get the starting pitchers to get them to 5 and 6. That's the formula, and let the bullpen take over. Hopefully, Ollie can manage the bullpen well enough to have guys available. That was an issue not too long ago. But
you can't manage a bullpen. You can't manage a bullpen worse than Mike Schild ever did. So you know, whatever.
All right. So St. Louis Cardinals again. We'll be checking on them, and we'll get Marty's thoughts as well. So we'll get his thoughts on the Cardinals. We'll get his thoughts on the SEMO baseball, softball, and tennis teams, and whatever else comes to mind. Maybe get his thoughts on if that was a offensive foul in the Iowa UConn.
Everybody
game.
In this area knows what Marty says goes. So whatever Marty says about that call, that's what the answer is.
All right, the one and only Marty Mischel. Glad to have him join us here in the SEMO Scramble. That's coming up next. Welcome back, SEMO Scramble here on SEMO ESPN Radio. Clay Harrell, Rusty Hendricks, and you know, normally Marty Mischel, Clay is on with the sports huddles on Mondays, but hey, we were somehow able to get the one and only Marty Mischel here on Saturday. So, Marty, how's it going?
Oh, man, thanks. I'm a big fan. You know, my Saturday routine on weekends, Saturday and Sunday, I like taking long walks, and I always listen to the radio, ESPN Radio, and I never miss your guys' show, man. I'm a big fan, so you guys do a great job.
Appreciate it. And you're on your walk right now. How many steps you got in? Any idea?
I don't know. I usually try to walk about 2 hours, try to get in about 8 miles. That's a pretty good brisk walk. So if you hear some weird sound, it's kind of the wind blowing. So nothing nefarious is going on my end.
Do you have a shirt on? That's what we want to know.
Yeah, you know, I'm at the age now where when I was a lot younger, you know, in better shape, I would always take my shirt off. Now, you know, if I'm at a pool or something, or now Lainer, Jess and Eric always kid me. For some reason, Jess lives alone, but he said he always wears a shirt. I said, man, I live alone. I wouldn't think about wearing a shirt unless I'm just freezing cold or something. I rarely have pants on when I'm laying around the house.
I understand. I'm sorry, we didn't play your open today. I'll leave that for the sports huddle. I know that bothered you.
Yeah, Jess. I don't think Jess likes that song, so I don't know why Eric plays it. But anyway, I'm glad to be on your guys' show.
All right. Well, Marty, let's start with, I know that you watch. Let's start with the NCAA tournament, the women's game, that Iowa-UConn game. Of course, big controversial call with that moving screen. I want to get your thoughts on that. Was it the right call in your opinion?
Well, not being an official or anything like that, I've listened to the first part of the show. I heard you guys discuss it, and one of the ESPN people this morning was the first person I actually heard that said she's on. I think it was Carolyn Peck. She's on the broadcast and everything. She actually said, I'm pretty sure it was her. She was the first one that actually said it was a moving screen, you know. So if you're going to call that in the first half, you got to call it. I'm like you guys. With a game like that, so hotly contested, I would like to see it not called unless it was just egregious, you know, where you know, you just could not call it. If they wouldn't have called it, I don't think, other than probably Iowa, if a shot had gone in, most people would have thought it was good not to call it. I'd have liked to see Connecticut get a shot up and see what happened. But I agree with you, probably by the letter of the law, it was a foul.
Marty, if going into the national championship Sunday, is Dawn Staley crazy if she doesn't take a page out of Geno's book and face guard Caitlin Clark the duration of the game?
I got to think so, man. They'll be all over her. And, I'm looking forward to the game. And Caitlin Clark has been such a great story and great for women's basketball. But, man, I can't see South Carolina losing that game. They're so powerful, undefeated. It would take, I think, a monster performance from Clark. And, you know, she did just enough last night because she's such a great passer. She doesn't have to always score for them to win. But I think against South Carolina, she's going to have to score one of those 40-point kind of games, I think.
Yeah, I agree, Marty. I mean, with the athleticism that South Carolina has and their size, boy, it's going to be hard. You know, we saw them, Iowa, struggle a little bit with LSU and their athleticism. So for them to go up against South Carolina, it's kind of another animal. But I want to ask you about the men's games real quick. A couple of games tonight. You have NC State, and you have Purdue, and then you have UConn as well going up against Alabama. What do you think happens in those two games?
Well, even though North Carolina State is such a great story, I really would like to see a final with Purdue and UConn, because I'm pretty sure UConn's going to beat Alabama, like most people think. And I think Purdue, with Zach Edey, probably has the only legitimate shot to knock off UConn if everything went right. But UConn's a machine. They said they've won 10 games in a row in the NCAA tournament, 6 last year, 4 this year, by at least 13 points. Nobody's ever done that. And what's interesting about UConn, they were supposed to be good this year, but they weren't supposed to be like a prime repeat contender. They lost 3 guys in the NBA. They lost 5 of their top 8 scorers. But Danny Hurley's kind of just taken over, I think, as the preeminent coach in the country right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I would love to see Purdue and UConn and have the two big men battle it down low with Zach Edey. So I think that would be kind of the most, you know, fun matchup to see. But it's also been fun to watch DJ Burns and Horn for NC State and how impressive the run that they've made.
Oh, man, it's been great. I was saying on Eric and Jesse's show, DJ Burns, he's one of those guys, if you just saw him walking around, you wouldn't think he's a great basketball player, you know, because he doesn't have the typical basketball player's build. But, man, you talk about feet and hands and what a sweet touch. I mean, the other day against whoever they were playing to get to this far, against Duke, I mean, he was putting up those shots from all angles that never even hit the rim. They were just swishing everything. So, yeah, I mean, I love to see the upset. So I would love to see NC State win. But I got to think it's going to be Purdue and UConn like most people think.
Marty, I want to transition to – we were talking before we had you on about if SEMO baseball and softball had ever beat Mizzou in the same year. Do you happen to have an answer to that? Because Rusty got the answer from Jeff Hansa. Do you have a guess on if that's ever happened before?
I don't know. I mean, it'd be easy to – you know, they have all the year-by-year results. It probably wouldn't take that long for somebody over at SEMO to just look at every year-by-year result and see. It might have happened Yeah, that Mizzou, that SEMO. Now, Mizzou baseball is really bad this year, so that wasn't as big a surprise. But that softball, that was an amazing win. I was actually watching that game on ESPN Plus, and Patience Holman, you guys touched on it. She was just masterful in that game. The wind was blowing in like 30 miles an hour, and Mizzou just kept hitting everything in the air, you know, like they expected to hit some home runs, but there's no way you were going to hit home runs on that day, and the great win. But, it could have happened because SEMO and although SEMO softball, Mizzou don't play as often, SEMO baseball up till the last couple of years had played Mizzou sometimes twice a year for years. But softball probably didn't play him enough, so it might not have happened. But that is quite a feat for SEMO to beat Mizzou in both those sports on the same year.
Well, it has happened before, Marty. And according to Jeff Hansa, the sports information director of SEMO, it happened back in 2000. So that's the last time that SEMO sweeped the baseball-softball series against Mizzou. That's pretty cool.
I knew Jeff would come up with that. We were on the air with Eric's show the other day, a couple weeks ago, after SEMO baseball had scored like 56 runs in that 3-game series at Eastern Illinois. And we were talking, has that ever happened before? And, you know, you can't remember something like that if it did. So we were wondering, you know, and then Jeff, within, I think, 5 minutes, texted Eric and got the exact date when it happened, 2016, I think, against UT Martin.
Yep.
Back when UT Martin was just horrible in baseball, they're decent now. I think SEMO scored like 60 or 61 in that. So anyway, if you need an answer about SEMO, Jeff will come
That's
up
right.
with it quick.
You know, staying on the subject of SEMO baseball, what has to happen for them, Marty, to get things back on track? Is it more of, because I don't think offense is the issue. Is it something defensively? Is it the pitching? To you, what's the big thing for them to get back on track and kind of get back to their winning ways?
Well, they're 5-2, tied for first in the OVC. So I don't know of any answer for them to get back on track. I think they're fine. I mean, they ran into the top pitcher and starting pitcher in the conference last night, who went all 9 innings, struck out 11. Nobody's touched him all year. His name's Hoss Brewer for Little Rock. So we'll see how they do these last 2 games. So other than that game, SEMO's put up monster runs in all their other OVC games so far. And while their pitching's not dominant, it's interesting because OVC is a hitter's league. You know, like I think Little Rock has the top ERA in the conference, and it's well over 5. SEMO's ERA is over 6, and they're one of the top 3 or 4 ERAs. So I think SEMO's got a decently well-rounded team. Like I say, I don't know if they have to fix anything. I think they've got to keep like they're playing other than last night, and they'll be fine.
How important is it, Marty, for them to win the next couple of games, to win this series against Little Rock? You mentioned it with the two teams battling at the top of the OVC.
Well, there's so many series left in the OVC. I'd say it's not vital to win both games, but I think that you don't want to lose the last two and then get swept. Because then that puts you 2 games behind Little Rock, who was a preseason favorite. If you can just split these next 2, at worst, you'll come out still tied with them. And like I say, there's 3 OVC series would be in the books. And you've got 10, I think it's 10, I'm trying to think. I think there's maybe 9, I can't remember, but either 9 or 10 OVC series. I think there's 9 OVC series. So you got so much time left. So if you don't get swept in this series, I think you'll be fine.
So talking things over with Marty Mischow, I want to give a shout-out. I know John Rice, a buddy of Marty and ours, he listens every week as well, so hopefully he's enjoying this interview with Marty. But, Marty, I want to talk about SEMO tennis. How about the tennis squad winning the OVC title again? They get the victory over Southern Indiana. How impressive are they?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was at that match yesterday. I never miss a SEMO tennis match. I'm a big tennis fan. I used to play all the time. And anyway, but just to put it in perspective, what a job Coach Mary Beth Gunn has done. And I think she's been there, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 years. Took her a few years, obviously, to get it going. But before she got here, SEMO women's tennis had never won an OVC regular season or tournament title. I don't think they've ever been close. And now that's 3 in the last 4 years regular season championships, and they'll be going for their 3rd straight tournament title here in a couple weeks. So you talk about right now one of the preeminent sports at SEMO that really not a whole lot of people follow. It's amazing what she's done.
You know, Marty, you said you've seen them, you don't miss a tennis match. What is it that allows them to have so much success? Because when you kind of look at the numbers, like it feels like just up and down their lineup, like they're just so dominant, and it doesn't feel like there's a weak link in their kind of their rotation.
Well, tennis is one of those sports. It's all about recruiting. It's not like basketball or football where you can design some, you know, great X's and O's stuff like in a game to overcome maybe a little lack of talent. If you don't have the talent to begin with in tennis, there's nothing a coach can do. But she's just done an amazing job of recruiting, and it's all international students, which most of the tennis teams at this level are. Most tennis teams around the country really are. But anyway, obviously you can't go to foreign countries and in-person scout. So she just has a technique down. We're through video, talking to coaches over there she's made connections with. She just has an ability to identify the level of talented players she needs to compete for the OVC championship year in and year out. She's got that down to a T, and it's like I say, other schools in the OVC also have mostly, if not all, international players, but they don't have the success SEMO does, so you got to credit her and just how she can recruit and spot that talent to bring into SEMO. And by the way, all these international, I've met a lot of these young ladies. They're all such tremendous character people, and they're just really, you know, happy to be in the States, going to college, getting an education, and playing tennis.
So, Marty, it's a big day for St. Louis sports going on this weekend. You have, St. Louis City SC MLS going on. You have the St. Louis Blues, the Battle Hawks, big game tonight at the Dome, and also the Cardinals. But I want to touch on the Cardinals a little bit here. What have you thought about them in their first eight games? They're 4-4. What have you thought about them so far this year?
Well, record-wise, I'd say 4-4 is pretty good considering they had to go to that seven-game West Coast trip. It's hard to get a read right now, you know, till they get a lot of their injured players back. And we'll see how this experiment with bringing in these old starters works out. Right now, I read in the paper that through eight games, the Cardinals have only had two quality starts, which statistically they say if you have a quality start, I think you win like in the 60s percentage-wise of your game, which is pretty high. And quality start doesn't seem that impressive. It's six innings, three earned runs or less, which computes to a 4.5 ERA. But nowadays, the way baseball's gotten, not many pitchers even go six innings anymore. So that was kind of the thing. Gibson, Lynn, and Gray, now he's going to be your workhorse and, you know, when he comes back. But Gibson and Lynn have a track record of a lot of quality starts, even if their, you know, season stats aren't that great. So that comes to fruition. And Michaelis and Matz can do some of that too. You know, I don't expect the Cardinals to compete for a World Series, but they should be good enough to have a good chance to win that weak division, I would think.
You know, to your point, Marty, about nobody or not really that many pitchers going six innings, on the first weekend last weekend, like I think five or six pitchers had gone went over six innings. So, you're spot on there. But when it comes to, you mentioned getting everybody healthy, we were talking about this before we started this morning, like what do you do when Lars Nootbaar comes back and some things start to maybe clog up a bit? Do you see them, you know, keeping Victor Scott in center field? Could you see them sending him back down? Kind of what's your opinion on all that?
I would think they, unless he really gets hot at the plate, I would think send him down and let him get, you know, tons of at-bats against AAA pitching because, you know, and now I will say this, you know, later on in the season maybe, if he shows enough, the Cardinals maybe need to restock with some pitching. If they're in the hunt to do some things, they can maybe get, you know, use some of the surplus they have to maybe bring some pitchers in, but I can't imagine he would stay up unless he gets hot because it's hard to carry. No matter how exciting a young player and how good a defensive player he is, it's hard to carry a guy if he's only hitting 100.
What else, Marty?
Man, I mean, this was a good talk. And hey, you mentioned Russ. You mentioned John Rice. He's a good buddy of mine, and he's actually the one who turned me on to the show. I didn't actually know about it, but months ago, I don't know when you guys started the show, even before Clay came on. But John said, man, you got to check out the Simo Scramble on Saturdays. It's a great show. So I started listening. I'm hooked now, man. I swear I'm not just saying it. I don't miss a show of you guys.
Marty, I wanted to ask you, we talked about it again before you came on. How awesome are those Simo baseball jerseys they're going to be wearing here in a couple weeks?
How often what?
How awesome are those Simo baseball, the Browns-inspired jerseys they're going to be wearing here in a couple
weeks?
Oh, man,
yeah, I heard you guys talking about, you know, Clay, what's interesting, the gentleman, you did a great article on Doc Yowley, you know, the local baseball
yep.
legend. He probably, I think when I was there for the interview, I think we mentioned it, he was about 12, 13 at the time when the Browns trained in Cape in 1944 in their spring training. And he got to know all those players because they would kind of take the kids in as kind of like mascots, and he would tell stories. So that actually be a good story when Simo wears those uniforms. Talk to maybe some of the old timers who were around when the Browns were in Cape training. That'd be an awesome story.
I think Tony actually has something in the works right now because I've been talking to him about it. He's working on something. He's been digging in the archives from that year, from 1944.
Yeah, and like I say, and not only Doc, although find out a whole lot of people that are still around from then. Doc's 92. He's still doing well. But he tells me stories all the time about those days with the Browns. He can name off every player still off the top of his head. But those were, I saw those online. I saw the pictures of those uniforms, man. Those are awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Marty, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us. It is our pleasure that you're joining us today, and thanks for the kind words.
All right, thanks. See you guys.
All right, take care. We'll see you.
All right.
All right, Marty Mischow, the one and only Marty Mischow. Appreciate him, Clay. Let's take a quick break for about a minute. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up after this on the CMO Scramble. CMO Scramble here on CMO ESPN Radio. Went a little long, but that is all right. Love to talk to Marty Mischow. First time having him on the show, and that was a lot of fun talking to him and just a nice wrap of everything. He's so knowledgeable, Clay, when it comes to CMO athletics. Talk about, you know, just the sports in general in our area. And, you know, he watches them all pretty much. I mean,
I want to know how. Like, I seriously, like, I feel like we could ask him about, like,
anything.
Like, maybe the lowest level of soccer, like
pickleball,
like professional, like, soccer, and he's going to have an answer. So I just want to know how he does it, because it's impressive. I love talking to him. Great guy.
Yeah, appreciate him again for joining us. I did want to mention the St. Louis Battlehawks. They lost their first game 18-16 last week.
64-yard field goal by a guy that never kicked a field goal before.
Yeah, I haven't heard, but I'm sure he's going to get an offer for the NFL.
Yeah, you would think. That's. Yeah. I mean, hey, I think at that point you just tip your cap and keep it moving. Because.
So the Battlehawks play today at the Dome at America Center at 7 p.m. You can watch that game on ABC against the Arlington Renegades. Look, the offense was slow early on, Clay, last week. That did pick up in the second half, but it was a little too late. But A.J. McCarron and company, look, I think they have a chance to have a good year. Now, we were hoping to get Anthony Becht on this week, so I know I alluded to that last week. It didn't work out, so maybe we can get him on in the future. But, you know, look, I know, again, maybe not a lot of people care about the UFL and the Battlehawks, but I do think it's neat. And so that's tonight. And then also the St. Louis Blues play tonight at 5 against the Sharks. Look, Clay, you know, they've had an opportunity, but they have lost 3 out of their last 5 matchups. And with just 6 games remaining, currently they have, according to playoffstatus.com, a 3% chance to make the playoffs.
Yep, it's over. They were kind of the big story this last week with Jimmy Snuggerud deciding to go back to the University of Minnesota for another year, which, hard to blame him. I think he wasn't really thrilled with the end of the year he had, and I don't think many people thought he had a great end of the year, so he's going to go back. I think he's going to be the captain. Kind of seems to be the writing on the wall. And it's also, like, I was listening, I think it was Alex Ferrario saying it, maybe it was Chris Kerber. I was listening to 101, and they were basically saying, like, you know, why bring him in, like, if you're still figuring some stuff out in the locker room, like, you're not winning a lot, like, might as well just kind of let him go. But I think now just play the young guys. Let Bolduc, let Dean play, get Matt Kessel in there, and let's just kind of
switch the lineups.
Switch it up. Yep. This team is going to look very, very different next year, I think. It's going to have to. I think one of your big contracts on defense are going to move out. I think Buchnevich. I think one of Buchnevich or Kyrou's out next year. And it's just kind of, that's part of the retool. You guys didn't get it done. You got to switch it up. But no, and I think we're not too far away, though, from Dvorsky, Snuggerud, Stenberg, Lins. Like, we're close to the future of the St. Louis Blues in this draft that they just had. And I think now, these last, you said 6 games?
6 games, yep.
I think now you just try
7 points out, 6 games left.
You just got to punt on those games, man. Yep. Try to improve your draft position as best you can.
We have turned the page to next season.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I'm already looking at what the offseason could look like. And this team this year could look so much different. If Torrey Krug didn't waive his no trade clause, like, that whole thing with the Flyers would have went down, and it would have, I mean, would have been a huge, huge trade. So, yeah, that's kind of what happens though, when you give a bunch of guys no trade clauses, and that's going to probably be an issue this year. So we will see.
We will see. All right. Good show, Clay. Appreciate Marty Mischow once again. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Clay's going to get out of here. He's going to St. Louis to the Cardinals game. So if they don't win, can blame Clay.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Well, enjoy it, man. Have a good weekend. And for everyone out there, take care. Clay, last words?
Thanks again to Marty. Have a great weekend. It's going to be a nice weather day. So if you're a golf fan, go play some golf.
Masters next week, buddy.
Masters weekend next weekend. So you best believe next Saturday I'll have Rory McIlroy, because it'll be mid-round. So Rory McIlroy to win the Masters.
Rory McIlroy. I'm going to go, and who should I go with? Boy, that's a good pick.
You know, Scotty Scheffler's playing
pretty decent
golf. I thought
about Scheffler. man. I'm going to go with John Rahm. I'm going to go with John Rahm to win it again.
All right, there you have it. Go bet anything else but those two players, and you should win some money.
All right. Clay Harrell, Rusty Hendricks, SEMO Scramble here on SEMO ESPN. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to the SEMO Scramble on SEMO ESPN. Tune in every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 for a dash of hometown pride right here on the SEMO Scramble. Yes, don't miss the latest news, scores, and stories that matter most to local sports enthusiasts. From the Boot Heel and beyond. Right here on SEMO ESPN, 1220 AM, 93.5 FM, the SEMO ESPN app, and at SEMOESPN.com.